So I've been working on Thomas the Tank Engine,
Yes.
which will come up today. I did not know that when I
Interesting.
started this topic. There is a Thomas tie-in.
Okay.
There's also a short story tie-in that I think we can use to just transition into that whenever we want.
Interesting. Okay.
And this one I knew about this. I forgot to like connect those two dots though. So
Huh.
like obviously I knew we were talking about moving into short stories and books. We've been kicking that around for a while, and then I also knew about this reference, this allusion here in today's topic. And
Incredible.
it's one, I think you maybe brought this up as a potential starting point for a short story, actually.
Okay.
So this will work out great. So let's just get into this.
There's just a Harrison Bergeron in there somewhere.
Not quite, but close.
Okay, perfect. Perfect, perfect. Yep, love it. Awesome.
RuneScape does a lot of like in universe or yeah, a lot of allusions and references that you could not know and miss nothing. But it adds some character if you're familiar with some of the source material.
Yeah, that's fun. I feel like when you're making an MMO like this, at some point you just have to kind of lean on to like, yeah, and there's this house over here. This is just the Pride and Prejudice house. You know, one of the
Yeah.
characters is named Elizabeth Bennet, and that's up to you to get that one.
Yeah, part of me is just assumes like at some point you're like, I can't come up with more names of things. That part of my brain has been exhausted.
Yeah.
So now we're stealing. And we're gonna call it classy because it's what we're referencing.
Yeah, because it's
Okay.
Jane Austen, so it's classy.
So, today we are talking about the rough area of Draenor Village, Draenor Manor. I sent you a map with some squares on it.
Yep.
There's like a burgundy square. That's the area we're going to be talking about ish. I don't know, I just slapped them on there quick without thinking about it too much. There's also the yellow square in the bottom right corner that is labeled Lumbridge Castle. That is where you start the game. So you
Oh.
go through Tutorial Island. They teach you about some of the skills. They teach you like the bank interface, that kind of stuff. And then you just get dropped into Lumbridge Castle courtyard, and there's like no indication what you should be doing from that point forward.
Perfect. Okay.
That's gotten better. It's gotten a lot better. They've spent a lot of time trying to improve the new player experience and make it somewhat guided if you're the type of person who appreciates a little bit more direction. A lot of especially when they like released OSRS onto mobile, that was a big uptick in people who maybe had not played the game before suddenly coming at it. And it becomes clear pretty quickly that if you don't have some background knowledge, it's not uncommon that you like drop in, walk around for a little bit, get confused, log out, and never come back.
Yeah, I mean that's what happened to me 10 years ago, and I had a guide, so I get it.
To be fair, your guide was also a dumb child, so
Fair enough.
I knew more then than I did when I started, but not compared to now.
Sure.
So these areas are pretty nostalgic because of that. I also don't remember when the world map got added to the game. So
Okay.
there's a chance it was always there, and I was just a kid who couldn't find it.
Sure.
But I feel like I remember going like having to open a separate window like in a browser to Google the map of the game world to try to figure out where the heck you were and where the heck you were trying to go.
Huh. Yeah, you really don't think about that, especially for games like this, that like there is this huge continent that you are going, and there are reasons to go to the different places, but it's just kind of assumed these days that a map exists, like you will be able to push the M key and you will find out where you are and where you can't go, or at least the scope of the world.
Exactly. And my memory of it, whether it's correct or not to the time, was that there was a mini map you have in the upper right hand corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that roughly displays about as far as you can see on the screen anyway, maybe a little bit further at the time.
Okay.
Render distances weren't great running this thing in a browser, as you can imagine.
Sure.
Especially in like 2005.
Right. Yeah. Running this on dial-up.
Yeah. Which I did. And opening a map in the other in another window also means there's like no communication between the game and the map. So you don't know where on that map you are unless you already know where on that map you are.
Right.
So this was one of the early... I honestly think I can read maps because of this game. Because you had to figure out where you were going, look at the routes to get there, pick out a couple of like key points of interest that you might recognize as you were traveling to not get lost. Which was very common as a child. Yeah. I mean, there were times, if you had to cross the White Wolf Mountains, that was like, I would plan a day around that.
Amazing.
If I had to get over to the Gnome Village, or Feldip Hills, or the Wizard's Gill in Yanil, that was like a 10-minute walk, probably more. Probably like a 15-minute walk if I had a rough idea how to get there. And maybe like an hour if you get lost a few times. I remember Settled of Mauritania fame, Swampletics. He told the story about when he was very young and starting that he had his character going for a little bit. I can't remember how long he was playing, a couple days, a couple weeks, something like that. Got lost somewhere, could not figure out how to get back to Lumbridge, started a new account.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so it was like that levels of getting lost. It wasn't uncommon to have someone walk you to Varrock or other places if you were a new player, because navigation was tough as a child.
Yeah, fair enough.
All of that is kind of a preamble to this area is a place you spent a lot of time, because it was close to the start, it was relatively recognizable. You'll notice in that Burgundy polygon there is a crossroads roughly dead center.
Mm-hmm.
And those pretty accurately coordinate to the cardinal directions.
Okay.
So this was kind of a hub to get around through most of the free-to-play area as a kid.
Okay. Yeah, and it looks like there's plenty of icons populating, like Lumbridge, and then even into Draenor, and like stuff out in the wilds, too. So it looks like you have your basic skills, at least. Looks like fishing and lumber and stuff.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest draws, which I guess we'll just talk about this first, is the willow trees. They're a little tough to see on the map. So we have Draenor Village proper in the bottom half of that rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that fishing icon in the bottom left corner. There's a couple trees around that.
Yep.
That is a really tight grouping of willow trees, which have a relatively low woodcutting requirement. And they provide pretty fast logs, and at the time it was the fastest XP you could get. So there would very frequently be anywhere between like 10 and 100 people at those trees all
just
the time,
turns to chop
just
down.
Just chopping trees down. Yeah, just shooting the shit and chopping trees. There's a few dark wizards that hang out near the trees that will smote your ass if you're a low-level player. If you're high enough, they don't attack you. Or frequently one of the higher-level players there will just walk over and two-tap them quick. Just to keep the area clear. So, let's go through some of the in-game lore, maybe. You asked me in chat if there were vampires here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why. I truly saw this map, and the first thing I thought was, I weirdly have Curse of Strahd on the brain, and I feel like this screams there are vampires here. There's something about a manor house that is bigger than the village that really feels like there's probably vampires here. Like there's probably something weird going on here, and then, yeah, Strahd was on the brain. So are there vampires?
There's vampires here.
Yes, yeah. Of course there is.
There are vampires.
There's always vampires.
We're going to talk about vampires.
Yes.
Some vampire-ass vampires. We're going to start with the Tom. I'm all over the place today. That's fine. We're going to start with the Tavis tie-in, because I found this and I think it's funny. So we have Draenor Manor. We have Draenor Village. There is a Draeton Manor resort not super far away from where this game was developed in the UK.
Okay.
Drayton. So great. It's assumed that they just cropped the T out of there and called it a day.
Yeah.
But Draeton Manor Resort now has a Thomas Land, which is based off of the Thomas the Tank Engine television series.
Incredible.
So there's our Thomas tie-in.
Is it like an amusement park?
Yeah, it is like a 90-acre amusement park or something. Like, it's big. This is a massive... This is like a Six Flags sized sort of place from what I've gathered.
Okay.
And the Thomas and Friends, the Thomas Land area, replaced a former themed or sponsored, I don't know, I haven't been there, themed or sponsored area called Robinson's Land. And Robinson is a brand of soft drinks or fruit drinks in the UK as well. So there's our soda tie-in.
To
another info dumping.
Perfect.
So we're gonna start with Draenor Manor, I think.
Okay.
And Count Draenor.
Oh, of course, there's a Count Draenor.
There's a Count Draenor. Great. He has a monocle.
Oh, a classy vampire.
Yeah. Is he a Sesame Street reference? Who knows? Maybe.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, count check. Yeah, we're gonna do Sesame Street too.
I've been watching a lot of Sesame Street lately, so we could do Sesame Street.
We should do Sesame Street.
Just do like a whole episode on Mr. Noodle.
Yeah, I think we can handle that. So Count Draenor is your bog standard vampire. Lots of allusions to Dracula. Which, sure. I suppose we could always just do that as a topic. That wasn't the literary tie-in I had in mind, but yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing. We got garlic. We got a stake and a hammer. We have some regeneration. He lives in the basement of the manor and sleeps in a coffin. Like,
okay.
This is your platonic count. Count Draken has a few siblings around. Ronis, Venescula, Lorinel, all of House Draken. I don't know if those names have come up in any of our Mauritania discussions, but they are hanging out in Mauritania, maybe? We'll get to there eventually.
Okay. I think you've mentioned Draken before, but I don't think we've said those names yet.
Yeah. I would assume so. So all the vampires come from a different plane of existence, Vampirium, from who knows when, and they showed up through some of the Stargate shenanigans that we covered.
Is that first age or second age? But they're, yeah, the bad people that came in second age, maybe?
I believe so.
Okay.
Count Draenor was a punk ass. His siblings, not a fan. This guy is all about giving himself overinflated titles, and it sounds like he's just kind of a pompous dickhead. And eventually, they kicked him out of Mauritania.
Okay. Because
they were sick of his shit. We're gonna gloss over some of the Mauritania stuff really quick. So, Mauritania is the hell pit swamp we've discussed a few times.
Yep.
It borders Varrok and the area of Mistelin. In between Varrok and Mauritania, there is a river, the River Salve. It was, in the third age, I want to say. After the Barrows Brothers, but before current timeline. There was a group of Ceridominists who bless the river, and that keeps all of the evil beasties from crossing the river.
Oh, okay.
Except for Count Draenor and his vampire underling, who crossed quite a long time ago.
Okay.
But they are significantly weaker than the vampires you would encounter in Mauritania.
Okay. And is this the river that is running just north of Draenor Manor?
No. This will be...
like farther north than
Varrock? Yes, and north and east.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's the two Varrock stamp in the top of that map I sent you that I made. Yeah, so it'll be a fair bit east of there.
Okay.
And it runs north-south. A lot of this, I think, is kind of retconned lore from later on. I think this is one of the earliest quests is going after Count Draenor, the quest Vampire Slayer. It's a free-to-play quest. It was one of the first developed. It's very low level. You can do it right out of the gate if you know what's going on. So I think a lot of this stuff, they kind of worked backwards of, oh, we made this barrier that these types of vampires aren't supposed to get past, so how do we kind of tie together all these loose threads?
Yeah,
and I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so we have the Vampire Slayer quest, which I said, like I said, is pretty early. You do need to kind of travel around to the area a bit, talk to a couple NPCs. You find out that there's the vampire there. You get your stake, you get your hammer, you go fight the guy. If you don't have the stake and a hammer, his health just regenerates to full when he gets down to zero.
Brutal.
And yeah, and you cannot kill him. Count Draenor's health also regenerates much faster than most NPCs. It's like 8 times faster or something like that. So that can make the fight a little tough at low levels, because he's going to be actively healing more than you are during the fight. It also means you can't, like, cheese that fight with poison or a couple other things.
Oh, because he regens faster than the damage.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. A lot of times you can use, especially as a low-level player, you can use poison to either make a fight easier, or frequently you'll see either speedrunners or, like, Snowflake Iron Man accounts. Man, that's probably a set of words we haven't said before.
I think we've said Iron Man, but Snowflake Iron Man, no.
Yeah, so Iron Man is an account type where you can't trade with anybody, you can't use the Grand Exchange, you gotta do the whole damn thing yourself. It takes a special kind of human to really get into that.
That sounds like my nightmare.
Yeah, and a Snowflake Iron Man, this is just a community term now, is a person who has made an account where they're doing something even more restrictive than just that. So your Swampletics was one of your first big Snowflake Iron Man accounts that got popular. So that's a guy locking his character to a specific area of the map and doing the Iron Man gameplay, but adding further restrictions either on location or skills, things like that.
Okay.
When you deal poison damage, you don't get combat experience from the damage that is dealt. Normally when you attack a monster, the experience you get from that attack is directly relative to the amount of damage you've dealt. So if you shoot him with an arrow, you get XP in your range stat. If you hit him with a magic spell, you get magic experience. If you smack him with a sword, you get attack strength or defense, depending on what you're doing. But poison doesn't generate any XP. So if you're trying to complete certain quests while still keeping your combat level incredibly low, poison is a way some people will do that.
Oh, I see. Okay. So if your Snowflake Iron Man thing is that I'm going to keep my combat level below 50 or something, you cheese that by using poison because you're not bumping your numbers up. Okay, I see.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And there's some of that in early Swampletics. There's the Temple Guardian who watches the Temple of Paterdomus, which is what is kind of, it's the temple related to the enchantment that is placed on the River South. And that's another NPC, another quest NPC that regenerates health quickly. And sometimes you have to complete these quests to get access to areas or to unlock skills or to unlock further quests down the chain. So yeah, frequently you'll see poison used for that. But that's tough here because, like we said, the guy regenerates health pretty quickly. Draenor Manor is a super interesting area of the map. As you can see from the map there, it's kind of dead and gross looking. There's a lot of brown and gray on the ground on that screenshot. All of the trees surrounding there are all dead and leafless. I think it's the first area you encounter that's really kind of void of life like that.
Okay.
Except some of the trees are also undead. Oh. They will smack you. That is a thing you is terrifying the first time you experience it. It's on the little path from that crossroads right up towards Draenor Manor.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of that whole area inside the white fence line there in between.
Yep.
Yep. That whole area you just is just a gauntlet of undead trees smacking you for like 1 to 3 damage.
Okay. That's awesome.
Which when you're like, you know, level 30, 1 to 3 damage, not a big deal. But when you only have 10 hit points, that's a gauntlet that you are not running.
Yikes. Okay.
A lot of quests have some overlap with either Draenor Village or Draenor Manor. We mentioned Vampire Slayer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Ernest the Chicken is another classic quest in Draenor Manor. Who is that one? That
no, is no further details on Ernest the Chicken.
Ernest the Chicken. So Ernest, what's her name? You meet a lady outside Draenor Manor. What is her name? Her name is Veronica. That's her name.
Okay.
She's worried because her fiancé Ernest has gone into Draenor Manor to ask for directions, and he has yet to return.
Uh-huh.
So you go into Draenor Manor, you dodge the trees, you dodge the ghosties that are hanging out in there. There are ghosties flopping around. They'll smack you around too if you're not careful. Eventually, through your exploring, you come across Professor Odenstein. Odenstein? Odenstein?
Odenstein? Who knows?
Who knows? Could be anything. One of the downsides to this thing not being voice acted and encountering all these names as a child is you, like, bake weird pronunciations into your brain that you don't realize for 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't know if... Yeah. Or no pronunciation. So... Maybe this is just a me thing, but when I come across like a weird name in a fantasy novel that I can't turn into mouth sounds normally, I feel like in my head I just replace that collection of letters as a symbol instead of a word, and then I don't even try to pronounce it. I just recognize that collection of letters equals that character.
Okay. I don't go so far as symbols, but, you know, the first Harry Potter movie really solves some issues for me when it comes to reading names.
Yeah, and there you get at least some kind of canon to point to and say, well, here's an official thing
right. Where
someone said the thing out loud. Or the best, like, we ever get here is, like, devs talking about it on Twitter or in a YouTube video.
Yeah, and at least with, like, some of those ones, they're based on real names, but I imagine once you go fantasy, it's way
all
different.
Bets are off.
A very short anecdote. I'm listening to the Stormlight Archives currently in audiobook form. I'm on book 4 now. But I had the opposite of that, where I've been listening to them and I know the names. Like, I know Shallan and Dalinar and Kaladin. And then I have, like, an absolute brain fart when I have to explain something about the books or talk about something about the books in text because I don't know how to spell the names. Like, I have no idea how any of these appear because all I know is how they're said and what they sound like. So I just don't engage. But yeah, I get it.
Same problem, opposite direction.
Yes. Yeah.
So here's your... I dropped Professor Odenstein into the chat.
I love this guy. That's just Einstein with fur boots on.
His examined text is a mad scientist, if I ever saw one.
Yep.
Which is true.
Yeah.
So the professor here, once you find him, he explains that Ernest came in to ask for directions, and mm-hmm. Professor here was like, hey, I'm going to have you help me out with this experiment real quick, and then I'll give you directions. So they're working on his poultromorph machine, and unfortunately Ernest has now been turned into a chicken.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering why it was called Ernest the Chicken and not Ernest and the Chicken. Okay. So is...
the so chicken is coming me... from inside the house.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You're telling me that they got a Dracula house and also a Frankenstein?
Oh, there's a Frankenstein in Mauritania that we'll cover sometime. You help harvest some brains for him.
Great.
There's a whole
just chicken Frankenstein.
Yeah, I feel like this one is maybe a little bit closer to like a behind a Back from the Future sort of vibe.
Okay.
In terms of the mad scientist relationship.
Oh, yes. Okay.
It's a little more whimsical. With a little bit of insidiousness kind of underneath it.
Okay.
But not... I feel like... Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to the Frankenstein.
But it's full chicken, so it's not like a Dr. Moreau either.
Correct. No, it's just a little chicken hopping around.
Love that.
And to un-chickenify the man, you need to go around and find some bits and bobs from the machine that the ghosties have stolen. Like an oil gauge and some rubber tubing, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a quest that people who have not played this game in 20 years will remember. So shout out to those that we've talked to a bit about
hits.
That. Yeah. In the basement of Draenor Manor is a logic puzzle that, if you are a child, is utterly impossible.
Okay.
Incompletable. Without a guide. I have very distinct memories of having the website RuneHQ open to some guide that somebody wrote and just really desperately trying to puzzle together this thing. So I'm gonna put another one in chat here. Here is the basement.
Okay.
It the letters are levers. So mm-hmm. it's an area with, I don't know, what, half a dozen rooms.
Yeah.
All the numbers are doors. So there's 9 doors and, what, 6 levers.
Yep.
And it's a, like, oh, if you pull this lever, these doors change their state. And if you pull the lever E, then door 2, 4, and 5 flips its state.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, so it's one of those, like... Pull the lever, run into the one room, pull that lever, run into a different room, pull that one. That closed the other door, but opened a new... It's that kind of thing. I feel like there was... Was there something like this in one of the early Pokemon games? Like in Slifco?
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah. That sounds right.
Same kind of vibe. Yeah. So it's a 12-step process to get an oil can.
That's
pull lever B and A, enter door 1. Pull lever D, enter door 1. Pull levers B, then A. Enter doors 3, 4, and 5. Pull levers E and F down. Enters doors 6 and 7. Pull lever C, enter door 7 and 6. Pull lever E, enter door 6, 8, and 3. Go through door 9 and grab the oil can.
Yeah, that's just torture. No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I could do it now with, like, a pen and paper in half an hour, but...
Yeah.
As an 11-year-old who had, like, 45 minutes before you needed to get off the dial-up because someone was expecting a phone call, this quest was antagonizing.
Yeah. Also, the modern internet has truly ruined my patience for things like this. Like, this is not the kind of puzzle that I get great enjoyment out of solving.
Well, that's why we have these fun little guides.
Yes.
They don't make... quests nearly this obtuse anymore. Okay. They do a lot more with environmental storytelling and leaving you breadcrumbs to make it not as miserable as this.
Yeah, God bless RuneLord 93 for putting this guide together.
Exactly. there's also, let's see, Professor has another experiment towards the roof, if I'm remembering correctly. Which sends you to a different plane of existence, so you can fight Killer Watts.
Killer Watts?
Yeah, they're a Slayer monster that only exist in this plane. Is this in here somewhere? Killer Watt plane. Here we go. Oh yeah, it's his own like Stargate that he has made. Boy, we'll probably never talk about Killer Watts again. That's fine. They're a Slayer monster. You need to wear insulated boots when you fight them, I think, or otherwise they zap you real hard.
Well, that checks out.
Not a big deal. That's most of Draenor Manor. There's some stuff growing around outside. I think there's a Belladonna patch for farming out and back, which would make sense. That's a poison thing. Yeah, that's probably about as far as we need to go with Draenor Manor itself.
Is there is there a fun quest to does Vampire Slayer just end up you going to the basement and stabbing him in the coffin, or is there like a cool boss battle on the roof or something?
You fight him in the basement. It's a pretty like visually stunning area for that level and for how early in development it was. Animal magnetism is another quest that ties through there, and that one factors in quite largely with the ranged skill.
Okay.
Ranged is shooting a bow and arrow. The animal magnetism quest gives you a item that you wear in your cape slot. And there's a couple different tiers of it. The lowest one, when you first complete animal magnetism, is called the attractor. Let's double check.
That would make sense.
Yes.
I would believe
the Ava's attractor. Or if you're over 50 range, then you get the accumulator. I couldn't remember which order those two were. But it's a backpack you wear. It's got an undead chicken and a magnet in it, and it collects some of the arrows you shoot for you. We'll cover that when we talk about ranged. We're going to go through the skills one of these days. And we'll go through all of Ava's devices when we talk about ranged, because they're pivotal.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a Ursa level of discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there something that is just core to English game design that has a heavy reliance on chickens? I'm just sitting here thinking about Ernest the chicken and Chicken Chaser from Fable, and it just seems like there's something about fantasy, English fantasy, that is reliant on chickens in some degree.
I would assume that's like an outgrowth of the historical setting that a lot of these fantasies are drawing from.
That's probably
fair. You got your fantasy peasants, you got mud, you got chicken farming.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yep, yep.
And your cereal crops.
Okay, yeah, mystery solved.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll come back to Ava and some of those ones in a different episode. That one ties into Mauritania, and yeah, we'll do animal magnetism at some point. That's the name of that quest. And also a scorpion's.
Yes. Well. Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, so Draenor Village itself sprung up likely independently of Draenor Manor. It's a little unclear. The Count, not a big fan of Draenor Village being there. So there's some antagonism between the village and the manor until you solve that by doing a vampire murder.
Gotcha. Interesting that so the manor was there long before the village.
That is the opinion of the things I have read. I don't think that period of history is like super fleshed out in anything.
Okay.
I'll have to go through. I have a book that has a lot of like old art assets and early RuneScape history. I should dig through there and maybe there's something in there.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I feel, just to go back to the Curse of Strahd thing, like my Strahd lore is very shaky because I haven't played it in a couple of years at this point, but I feel like there was the Strahds, and then they were benevolent great leaders, and then one of them turned into a vampire, and now he's just feasting on all of the people, and everyone is sad, and it's bad. It seems very funny to me that some people are just spelunking around the countryside. I'm like, this is like a good spot. There's good fishing. There's some willow trees down here. Just don't mind the vampire manor back there. Like, we'll probably just be fine setting up our wheat fields here. That's not going to be a problem later.
It's hundreds of feet away. I don't
hundreds.
I don't know what else you want.
Just don't go north on the crossroads where the trees will punch you. Otherwise, yeah. It's fine.
You know what? I'm coming around to Team Count Draenor here. This is maybe on on the people who encountered the fist fighty trees and continued forward.
Yeah. Yeah, Count Draenor, the greatest NIMBY of them all.
Okay, so, Draenor Village. We got our willow trees. We've got... Here, let me pull the map back up. We can kind of go through some of that. We've got the willows. We've got a bank. That's pretty key. That's that little dollar sign icon on the map.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason Draenor Village is frequented by players of almost any level... is, let's see, it's not on the map, but right in front of the bank is a teleport location.
Okay.
So there's a lot of teleports in this game. Like, man, probably hundreds, probably over 100, I would guess, if we count, like, all the different jewelry teleports and the spells and items and... There's a ton of stuff. The map's huge. Like I said before, traveling from one side of the map to the other was like required planning.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it by foot, planning and time. So because of that, there is a maybe ridiculous number of ways to move around the map quickly. One of the more common ones is the Amulet of Glory. So
good name.
If you... Yeah, it's a great name. It's a piece of jewelry. Goes in the next slot. So there are both necklaces and amulets. Necklaces have a metallic chain, I guess. The part that goes around your neck is metal for a necklace and string for an amulet.
Okay.
They have different functions. Once you enchant them, they get different abilities. Jewelry follows a similar system to the metals. So we've talked about weapons and armor a little bit. You have your different metal tiers, your bronze, iron, steel, mithril, adamant, rune. Jewelry follows a similar path. You have sapphire, emerald, ruby, diamond, and then dragonstone.
Okay.
You use the crafting ability. If you have one of those gems that is uncut, with a chisel, you can cut the gem and give it some facets and turn it into a usable shape. And then you further utilize crafting to make the necklace or amulet itself. To do that, you need the cut gem, a gold bar, and then whatever mold for the piece of jewelry you're using. So if you want to make a ring, you need a ring mold, amulet, amulet mold, etc. You have all those in your inventory, you go to a furnace, the gold bar melts, the gem goes away from your inventory, and you're left with... either a necklace or a ring or an unstrung amulet, which then needs a ball of wool, which you can obtain by shearing sheep and taking that wool to a spinning wheel and turning it into string, or by using magic to string jewelry. You get the idea.
Yeah, you're just playing ye olde Factorio here.
You know what? That's maybe one of the better examples for the Nightmare Factory that is this game.
Yeah, okay.
So, Amulet of Glory. If you are a player who can trade, it's a very cheap amulet. They're like 10 to 20K, depending on other stuff happening in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They provide incredibly high attack and defense bonuses, and it comes charged with four very useful teleports.
Okay.
Draenor Village is one of them. And since there's so many quests here, that teleport becomes really useful for moving around the map. Draenor Village is one of the slots. Let's see, where does Barbarian Village, I want to say? Why? Oh, Edgeville, sorry. Jeez, I am out of it today. So it has four charges to start with. Every time you teleport, you use one. Eventually, it becomes inert. You keep the bonuses, but you lose the ability to do any more teleports. The Dragonstone amulets themselves can be recharged a couple different ways. Those ones you usually have to go to like a specific fountain or a shrine somewhere and use the item on that. Other jewelry, once those charges are gone, the whole thing just turns to dust.
It's just done. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have we'll go with a ring of forging. It's a ruby ring. It increases the rate you get iron bars from iron ore. Once that thing has used up all 40 of its charges, it just turns to dust and leaves your inventory. Except for the Dragonstone stuff. Those ones go into an uncharged state, and then they can be recharged.
Gotcha.
So the Amulet of Glory takes you to, Draenor Village, Edgeville, Karamja, and Alcarid. I don't know how many of those we've covered. They're all in the free-to-play area. They're all very useful for early game quests.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
It's all keyed to location teleports then? Like, it's not like you get four free teleports, it is those four locations?
It is, you have four charges, and you can choose which one to go to every time you use a charge.
Okay.
So it can only go to those four coordinates on the map, but you get to choose which one of the four you use. So you could burn all four going to Draenor Village every time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
If you wanted to. They're juggling those charges becomes kind of a thing you have to do as a player. There are ways to combine. We'll do that later. The other really interesting thing for the Amulet of Glory is in the wilderness, it allows you to teleport out past level 20. So I know we've talked about the wilderness a little bit.
Yeah, that's the PvP
area.
It's
dangerous.
Right?
Yeah, that's the PvP area. The deeper you go into the wilderness, the more people who can attack you. So you take your combat level and compare that to how deep you are in the wilderness, and that determines who cannot attack you.
Gotcha.
Normally, you can only teleport out from levels 1 through 20. Standard teleportation spells and other jewelry work as long as you're under 20. Between 20 and 30, only Dragonstone jewelry and a few special quest items can teleport you out. Past level 30, you gotta hoof it and hope you don't die.
Yeah, so you would basically hoof it out of the worst area until you can hit that teleport.
Uh-huh.
Which I think we've talked about, but like a teleport is also not an instant thing, right? Like you have to be able to spool it up and use it.
They're all a little different. So like the Amulet of Glory, if you go to your equipment menu, where it shows everything you have currently equipped, you can right click on the necklace there and it gives you a drop down with the four teleport locations.
Mm-hmm.
If you just try to teleport with it normally, you have to go through a couple dialogue boxes. So you can get out pretty quick with that one, but it is two clicks. A common thing you'll see referred to when people discuss the game is one-click teleports. So teleports that can sit in your inventory, and you only have to left-click on them for them to activate.
Yep.
Those are pretty vital in the wilderness, because one of the things a person who's trying to murder you is going to do, potentially, is cast a teleblock spell on you, which keeps you from teleporting for a number of minutes or seconds.
Of course.
Yeah. So there's kind of a cat and mouse on, like, can you click on your teleport before they can land the teleblock spell on you?
Gotcha. Yeah. And so that's why, the less clicks, the better.
The less clicks, the better. And really, anytime you're fighting anything super scary, you tend to bring a one-click teleport because dying sucks and it's kind of a pain in the rear end.
Yeah.
So being able to just punch out is good. So, like, I always leave my my one-click in the bottom left corner of my inventory just so you start to, like, build muscle memory of if I'm panicking, I need to move the mouse over here and click. Because you could die. You could die in a hurry if you're not paying attention. Boy, how did we get there? Amulet of Glory. This is going to be a rambly episode, I guess.
Oh, because the teleport in front of the bank is very important.
In front of the bank is very important. So now we're going to talk about Amulet of Glory for 10 minutes. So you've got that teleport that drops you right in front of the marketplace. The marketplace has a couple of NPCs milling around and a few shops. One of which is going to be our literary tie-in. We'll do that one last. So there is a... One of the shops there allows you to recover like holiday and timed items. So frequently they'll do holiday events, your Halloween, your Christmas, they've been doing half a dozen a year, give or take.
Okay.
And frequently you get some kind of a themed item from those. Usually they're not tradable. Sometimes they are, but they're all time gated. Which have we covered party hats?
We have talked about them.
What happens when you have items in this game that can no longer be retrieved? If the supply stops on an item, the price goes up, and then it becomes like a secondary currency after a while. So one of the ways they combat that is by having all of those holiday items just at a market stall. So if you've completed the Christmas event, for instance, you will now have access to every item that released in a Christmas event prior to the one that you just completed.
Oh, all of them.
Yep.
Okay.
Everything. So the first time you go there, you get slapped with a huge dialogue box. It's like, you just unlocked these, 96 different random, mostly useless, but kind of fun items.
Holy cow. Okay.
Yeah, a couple of them have some niche uses. That could be a whole episode on itself, honestly. It's like weird niche items in this game that do silly things that you wouldn't expect. It's kind of like, I know you've played some Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you get a card that you like read it and you're like, oh, this is underpowered, dumb, and useless.
Yes.
But when paired with some other thing, it becomes a broken nightmare factory.
Yes.
And there's a few items like that where you're like, oh, this is useless. Oh, except in this one really specific case. So that's the toy store. There is a seed stall, and a couple of master gardeners walking around as well. The seed stall you can steal from using the thieving skill. You then use those seeds to plant via the farming skill, and depending on what you plant, sometimes you can continue the skill chain there. If you're growing herbs, you use those to make potions, or sometimes you're growing food for cooking, or those types of things.
Okay.
I want to say, is this where Martin is? Martin the Master Gardener, I want to say, is one of our friends near that stall.
It's a good name. It's a good gardener name.
Right? Yeah, Martin the Master Gardener is there. Have we talked about skill capes yet? Is that a thing?
We loosely touched on them because one of the Barrows brothers has a Legends cape and he shouldn't.
Ah, yes. Okay.
But other than that, not really, no.
So, quick diversion into capes of accomplishment. When you hit 99 in a skill, you can go to a specific NPC who will give you a special cape, acknowledging that you have hit max level in that skill. In this instance, we have Martin the Master Gardener. So once you hit 99 farming, you can go talk to this guy, give him 99,000 gold, and you get a really cool cape out of it.
Okay.
The cape has some bonuses. They all have a custom and what's the word I'm looking for? Animation is close. Emote. They all have a custom emote you can trigger using the cape. So everyone knows you have a 99 in that skill. Some of them provide useful bonuses. Some of them are completely useless.
Great.
That'll be, that could, yeah. Capes of Accomplishment, probably a good topic as well.
I want a tier list of all of the capes.
Oh, we can do that. We can do that. Some of them are shockingly trash compared to the others.
Perfect.
There's actually two Capes of Accomplishment, now I'm thinking about it, that we can get in Draenor. You've got Martin the Master Gardener there for farming. And we also have, if you look just north of the bank, there's an icon that makes no sense. It's blue and white.
Yeah, the Optimus Prime one?
Yes. Yes, the Optimus Prime house. That is the home of the wise old man, who is another character who's going to be a show topic in and of themselves.
Great.
The wise old man is in some pretty plain wizard robes. He's got some pretty awesome spectacles on and a blue party hat. It is unclear if the wise old man is an aging adventurer with tales to tell you from days past, or perhaps he's a bank robber. We're not entirely sure. Maybe both. We have evidence for both of those. And we'll leave him there for now. But he is the person you go to for the quest point cape, which is my favorite. You can only get that one if you've completed every quest in the game. There's too many.
Should we just jump back into this since we are short on time?
Yeah, let's jump back into this. You know what? A 30-second break turned into a 5-hour break, so I don't quite remember where we were, but we were talking about... we talked about chickens, we talked about vampires, we talked about trees that punch you back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We talked about capes.
Yep.
Martin. We were talking about the Fantasia wise old man. I think that's where we left off. Was him possibly being a bank robber?
I think we were in the marketplace next.
Yes.
And we will cut to the chase here with the reference I was holding over your head earlier.
Yeah, I think that was the thing, that we were just basically waiting on the literary reference, and I'm very curious about what this is.
So, the next stall in the marketplace we are going to talk about is the wine shop.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Operated by one Fortunato.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we are just doing Cask of Amontillado.
Yeah, is there a brick wall in the back there that, you know, has some sounds emanating?
He is in the corner.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think they lean into it too hard other than the name. I wonder what his examine text is, though. Let me check that. That might be something. Looks like he could do with a sip of Amontillado.
Amazing. They know what they're doing. Good work.
Yeah. Yep. So we've got the wine shop, which is actually useful, I guess, is sort of the thing here outside of the illusion. Wine is sold at 1 gold piece per jug.
Okay.
So very, very cheap. And it, when you drink it, it restores 11 hit points.
Okay. So, which is pretty good for especially a low level area like this, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like the next closest analog would be like a lobster, like a cooked lobster that heals 12. Let's see what that's priced at. The exchange price right now is 163 coins.
Oh, wow.
Lobster. Yeah. So, wine is a great healing food for low-level players. You can grab it at the shop, so it's available to Iron Men as well. There is a catch, though.
Okay.
You are just guzzling a jug of wine.
Yeah.
Your vision does, in fact, get all swimmy.
Nice.
So every time you chug one, you lose 2 attack levels temporarily.
Oh, okay. Is that a timed effect?
Yeah, it goes for a certain number of game ticks. There's a counter that governs status effects. That trips. Well, I guess it depends on the status effect on how often it goes. But there's a separate counter going basically at all times mm-hmm. to keep track of status effects.
Okay.
So attack specifically is only a melee skill, though.
Oh, so you can be drunk and still fire a bow pretty well?
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yep. You can still shoot an arrow. You can still do magic.
I love that. Of course.
So it is not uncommon to grab, like, an oak short bow, a bunch of arrows, and, like, 20 jugs of wine.
Just having a nice party at the vampire's house.
Yeah, just pickle your liver as you gain a couple of ranged levels.
Amazing. Yeah, I was thinking that the wine would be good as just, like, a hideout in a corner of the manor and get some HP back, but why do that when you can be shooting a crossbow in one hand and drinking a jug of wine in the other?
See, now you've got the vibe of the yeah, wine-ranged meta.
I love this.
Wine is also notable for cooking, so you can make wine as a player. I think you start at like level 35. Level 35 cooking to ferment wine.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you have a jug of water and you have grapes, you can smash them together, and you have a jug of unfinished wine.
Uh-huh.
That wine will stay unfinished for about 12 seconds. Then there is a dice roll that happens, and that determines whether you successfully make the wine or you made bad wine.
Okay.
If you successfully make wine, you get 200 cooking XP. If you make bad wine, then you don't. You have a jug of bad wine. That might not sound that interesting, but the weird part is every time you make another jug of wine, it resets that 12-second counter. For all of them.
So you can just basically spam them?
Yes. So you can only...
dice roll? Mm-hmm. Or how does that work?
So you can only make a certain number per inventory. You have 20 inventory spots.
Mm-hmm.
So you can only make 14 per inventory. But if you combine your 14 grapes with your 14 jugs, you now have 14 jugs of unfinished wine. You can then quick open the bank, deposit the unfinished wine, withdraw 14 more jugs of water, 14 more grapes, make more wine. That will actually reset the cooking timer of the wine, unfinished wine that is now in your bank.
Okay.
And you can repeat this process over and over and over again. And as long as you keep making wine within that 12-second window, even if you log out, I'm pretty sure this is still possible, the rest of the wine will stay unfinished. Which means this is one of the only ways you can get absolutely absurd XP drops all at once. Because every successful wine is going to give you 200. And if you keep making them, you could have a 1,000 unfinished wine in your bank. And then that will just 12 seconds later trip. And now you have 200,000 cooking XP.
Amazing.
That all chunks at once.
Just hits at one time.
Yes, it is nearly erotic as far as a point and click adventure game gets.
That feels satisfying. I'm a sucker for numbers going up and getting numbers going up, but all at the same time, that feels great. Big fan.
It's even better during some of the like limited time event game modes that they do. So the different leagues they run will sometimes have like an 8x or a 10x XP multiplier. So I think the last one that went, I got like well over 1 million cooking XP in one drop.
Jeez. Okay.
Not a lot of time. And it was great.
That's fun. I love that. That's great. Especially when like you do that normally and it's 200 and like all of your other skills go up so slowly just to get that little dopamine hit from making a vineyard's level of wine in 12 seconds feels pretty good.
Yeah. And it's actually like incredibly fast XP once you stop making bad wine. It's still really fast XP when you're still making bad wine, if we're being completely fair.
Does the and it's also very bad cheap. Wine get better?
Yes. I'm sure there's a graph on here. Oh, it's relatively linear.
Okay.
It looks like floating point math makes it not exactly linear, but it's darn close.
Enough.
Yeah, so at level 35, you have a 60% chance. Level 51, you have an 80% chance. And then at 68, you're at 100. So
okay.
You're gaining 10% every, I don't know, like 8 or 10 levels, something like that.
All right.
But it makes cooking very fast and incredibly cheap. Because grapes are cheap, jugs of water are cheap. So you can bank the cost of that pretty quick. You do lose money doing that, but if you want to hammer out a 99 to say you have a 99 and get that cape, then
that's one way of doing it.
That's one of the easier ways to do it. Yeah.
Okay. I think
cooking was probably my second 99. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh geez, we're gonna have to talk about how many 99s you have, but maybe we'll save that for the tier list.
Yeah. 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 It's not that many, but it's more than one, so.
Okay. There's more going on in this vampire village than I had originally expected.
Welcome to every place in Gyllenor.
Yeah. Fair enough.
We didn't even, we'll touch the Wizard's Tower another day. That was built right at the dawn of the Fifth Age when humans rediscovered the ability to craft runes for themselves.
Okay. All right.
We should probably cover Lumbridge at some point. Probably Varrock. Hit all the big, like, free-to-play areas as well.
Yeah, because I imagine... I mean, Lumbridge has just, like, a ton of icons compared to Draenor. And Varrock is sizable, right?
Yeah, so Lumbridge has maybe changed the most. They've added a ton of optional things to make starting this game less miserable. Okay. The one thing we skipped in Draenor, one of the things we skipped in Draenor, there's a rooftop agility course there. You run across the roofs, you parkour your way around, you get agility XP.
This is
going to tie in, yeah. Now, when this launched, you needed to be level 10 to start the Draenor course, which sucks when you're level 1 and you spawn at Lumbridge Cat. Yep. The level 1 area is in the Gnome Stronghold on the other side of the White Wolf Mountain. It is the kind of thing that that is one of the things I remember planning an afternoon around going to get there. Over there. Yeah, because it was that far away and that much of a pain.
Yeah, because I remember you saying that agility is one of the skills that, like, it you only level it by doing those agility courses, right?
Basically.
Generally.
There are a few other options. Most of them are just strictly worse.
Okay.
Some of the higher level stuff is better, but at a low level, pretty much everybody does the rooftop courses.
Okay.
You get... We'll cover why in an agility episode before I eat up another like 45 minutes of this episode. but one of the cool changes they made very recently, I didn't know this until I started researching this episode, is the Draenor course is now accessible at level 1, which is wonderful. They should have done that from the start. Yeah, I think like the idea was to encourage people maybe to try exploring the map a bit.
Sure.
Like, oh, if you want to train agility and get credit for these things, you have to hoof it across the world and access new places. But
yeah,
boy, was that confusing for new people.
Yeah. Especially when you probably, like, I don't know, the way I would end up playing one of these games is just carousing around the world, and I'm going to come across that agility course in Draenor and be like, What the hell, RuneScape? Like, let me run across the rooftops and level this. Yeah.
Exactly. So this May is when that changed.
Oh, that's
very recently.
Very recent.
Yeah, it looks like they also removed the ability to fail one of the obstacles, which is good. When you're hopping across the roof, sometimes you fall.
Do you still get XP if you fall?
So you get XP for each of the jumps that you make, and then okay. You get a big chunk of bonus XP at you the last it. Obstacle. Yeah.
That makes
so
sense.
You still get the XP up through the point where you fell. The downside okay. is you're going to be someplace you don't want to be. Because when you're running these for, you know, like 2 hours or something gross, you tend to, you get in a rhythm and you're just running laps.
Yeah.
And usually the end is relatively close to the start. And if you fall, you know, 2/3 of the way through, you might be very far away from
the
start again. Yeah.
I hate that.
Uh-huh.
2 hours. Good God.
Yeah. That's all it takes. Once. Uh-huh. Don't worry.
Just do it once.
Yeah. We'll talk about agility later.
Okay.
Yeah, what a hellhole this. Yeah. So yeah, that's Draenor, I suppose. And other areas TBD soon. TM.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I appreciate that they kind of just hit you with the high fantasy fun stuff basically right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's full of it. There's a witch who lives in Draenor we didn't get to. These episodes could be like 3 hours long. Aggie the witch is there. She makes dyes. There's a slayer master there now. That's another addition for new players. It is full on fantasy nonsense. Just up the road, there's even more. That's where we hit Port Sarim. There's wizard elemental wizards about. A highwayman that yells stand and deliver and attacks you. It's a good game.
I love that. Okay. Yeah, good stuff.
I think that is where we should end it for now before I continue rambling about this game.
All right.
Because I cannot be stopped.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, that is literally half the reason this show exists. So, fair enough. Awesome. So, if you like the show, tell a friend, rate and review, you know, all of the business. I've said it for 11, 12 episodes now, so I'll stop doing that soon. If you want to send a message or recommend a piece of world building, just go to the website, gordonheiberger.com, hit the contact page, and you can, I guess, send us some stuff. I sent a mega long list to you earlier today, and there are more things on that list, but we can always add more things to the list. The list can be infinite. I'm fine with that.
We're gonna have to start moving the list into two dimensions to contain as many items as we're slapping in there.
Yeah, it's getting a little unruly. Yeah, so I have been Phil.
I'm Logan.
And I forgot to do this the last couple times, so I need to get it in there now. Our music is by our very, very good friend, Nicholas Cahill. I'll have links to his SoundCloud in the show description. Check it out if you like it. And thank you, Nick, if you're listening. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another Codex entry.